Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. Thanks, everybody, for joining us again on GDP, the Global Development Primer podcast. And this week we have Anka Schwitte join us. She is at the University of Sussex. She's a professor of anthropology and global development at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom. She is author of New Media and International Development, Representation and Effect in Microfinance and Creative Universities, Reimagining Education for Global Challenges and Alternative Futures. So for this week, we're very happy that she's joining us because she's had an excellent article recently published that's sort of looking at the future of development, maybe by examining some of the challenges of the past, especially when it comes to teaching it. And we're happy to have her here to talk about questions of whether or not is global development dead. Anka, welcome to GDP.
Hi, Bob. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. It's great that that you're joining us, and joining us at a time when a lot of professors and a lot of students are kind of rolling around these questions about what we've done in global development in the past and what in the world are we going to do with it in the future. You've had a great article just come out. A friend of mine, a friend of yours, John Langdon, passed it on. I was like, wow, this is good stuff. And in your words in the article, you know, how can university work experiences, which have been, fundamentally designed into development programs, how can these work experiences contribute to reframing international development from what we've has become a culture of expert saverism, definitely rooted in colonial legacies, into a project of social justice and global solidarity? How do we do that? How do we unpack that?
Yes, that's part of the million-dollar question. I mean, I think, first of all, I want to acknowledge that much of my thinking around university experiences and how to use them to open up the space of international development, which is basically what I'm arguing, is coming from the work that you and your Canadian colleagues have done. I think there's so many brilliant publications that you have written over the years that have really kind of shaped my thinking around work experiences. So I just want to say thank you for all of that inspiration.
Always a pleasure to work with with great people along the way, you know?
Yes. So I don't think international development is dead. I think a particular version of international development is dead, and maybe it's not dead, but it's definitely diminishing in vitality, and maybe that's a good thing. And I think that's what we often think of as conventional or mainstream international development. And I think we have just been really good in our critiques of that particular version of development. Academics, right, we kind of post-development and other critical and now increasingly kind of decolonial scholars who have really shown the limitations, contradictions, failures of that model of international development. And I think young people, potential students, have been listening. And that's one of the things we are seeing in maybe a decline in, certainly here in the UK, in applicants to international development departments. Although I have to say that we've done a bit of market analysis around that at Sussex, and it seems like that programs who are choosing to go with sustainable development are doing rather well, yes. Which I think is an interesting point, because it maybe speaks to the salience of the sustainable development goals, which are really, you know, kind of shaping the popular discourse and are being used in so many different contexts. And that's something that students who are thinking about university are recognizing. But I think my argument for the kind of development that is worth saving and strengthening is not sustainable development, which I think in its UN mainstream forms has a lot of shortcomings as well. But this version that is much closer aligned with questions of social justice, solidarity, reparations, so a much more, I would say, activist notion of international development. And that's certainly something we do at Sussex. And that's resonating with the students we are getting into our program.
What does that mean by activist development? What are we looking at there when we talk about that kind of experience?
Yeah, so the way we frame it at Sussex is as a question of alternatives to international development. And the way we teach development, and I think it's really similar, I would imagine, to it is in Canada and in New Zealand, where I've taught as well, is a kind of a very critical approach to, again, a mainstream development, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, metaphorical quotation marks, because we know development is not homogenous, and there's a lot of kind of dynamism and heterogeneity within that. But kind of a conventional, global north, traditional Bretton Woods agreements form of development that we are really taking apart very critically in our teaching. But what we are then also doing is introducing students to alternative ways of thinking about development. And that obviously only can happen if you open up the space of what you define as international development. And by alternatives, so I maybe just give you some concrete examples. So we teach classes on activism and social movements. I know you do this as well. We teach classes on kind of designing alternatives to developments that are looking at, for example, solidarity and cooperative economic questions, climate justice, decolonial movements. So a real emphasis in our teaching on those social movements who are taking a more critical, a more alternative stance vis-a-vis kind of mainstream development thinking, and showing our students that's part of development. So that, if we open up this area of focus, then we can get students excited about that again, and they can see themselves being active in that expanded field of development.
Yeah, it's curious how really the pedagogy of social justice and activism in global development has only been about 10 years-ish, maybe 10, 12 years in the making. There's some trickles of it before, but it really took an uptick in around 2012, 2015, 16. And now what was sort of seen is kind of this novel approach is now becoming more grounded in shared practices and pedagogical theories. I remember when the early days of teaching development studies here in Halifax, I was fresh into the school here, and I think people were sort of joking around at the time the only experiential learning we were offering was basically how to write grant applications from the very institutions that we're critiquing within development studies. And it kind of didn't make much sense. So I said, well, why don't we do one about, skills of activism? And that's something that, is historic within many disciplines. You look at women and gender studies, you look at Black and African studies, you look at all sorts of great programs, and that's been at the core of it. So I remember we were trying to bring it in to the core curriculum here. You have to make a syllabus up, and it goes to a committee, and that committee sends it to another committee. And there's probably another committee involved. And then one of these committees basically called me in, as it were, and said, so we have some concerns about the class, about social justice and activism. Okay. And it's the experiential learning component. And they kind of railed on it. And it was sort of me in the hot seat, looking up at a panel of seven or eight colleagues feeling like, all right, I gotta carry this argument or I'm out the door. And I remember one guy on the panel said, well, what if the students just, Well, what if they start burning police cars and it goes out of control and the class is hijacked by radical elements? I kind of chuckled. I said, well, if it's hijacked by radical elements, we call the police. And if you're worried about burning police cars, I hope you would lobby this to professors in chemistry, because I have no idea how to do that, right? And I raise this because 10 years ago, the critiques against experiential learning and social justice and development were many because it was still novel. And now it's taken on. And now those critiques have shifted again. And there's more students that I know that I other people have taught the course here in the last 10 years, but more critiques I'm hearing from them is to say that students feel like they're being indoctrinated or they're being given some sort of a manifesto to follow. And there seems to be some pushback on whether or not this attempt of experiencing critical social engagement is still academically sound.
Yeah, oh gosh, so many really good questions. And I just want to say, I actually read the article you wrote about your experience with your activism module, which, you know, gets students out in the street and learning how to organize demonstrations and all kind of the related issues, which I think is amazing and a good experience. I can see where the concern was from the committees, the colleagues on your committee. I think maybe that's why I can talk a little bit about the article that I've just published in Journal Progress and Development Studies, because I am talking about expanding what I call the location spaces and pathways of university work experience, or I'm making an argument for kind of a work experiential pedagogy that absolutely needs to combine the critical teaching we do around international development with kind of students' own experiences and with this notion of praxis. So I very much build it around kind of a Freirean notion of praxis as a practice that is informed by theory. And what I'm basically arguing that if we are serious about reframing international development as a project of social solidarity, reparations, and justice, then our work experiences need to follow that call, right? We need to kind of walk our talk here, and that's a challenge because of the increasing employability kind of discourse and practices, which is massive in the UK. I'm not sure if it's as big or as kind of pushed by senior management in Canada, but really that connection of our students getting, you know, transferable employability skills. And of course, it takes on particular resonance in international development because it's such a practice-informed field, and because we have the context of what's often referred to as white saviorism, which I in the article talk about expert saviorism, because race is really important, but there are also infections of gender and national belonging that I think play a part of that. So what I'm saying is that within all of these constraints and these limitations, we do need to think about how work experiences can contribute to both a critical understanding of development, but also one, and I want to introduce another term here, which is really central to our teaching at Sussex, which is this idea of critical hope.
Oh, because I like that.
I don't know if you've had similar experience with your students, but I've had kind of discussions, and the same with my colleagues, where students are saying, oh, you know, appreciate this critical approach. I know why it's absolutely important, why we need to learn about the shortcomings and the failures, but it's leaving me hanging. It's leaving me quite disillusioned and cynical. And I came into the program because I, you know, want to use ID as a way to improve the world. And you're telling me that the system is broken and it's not working. So where do I go from here? What do I do with this knowledge? And that's where we in the, and that's kind of the focus of this larger work I did. And you mentioned my book on creative universities there, of which the article is kind of a spin-off. But this idea that through our teaching, yes, critical awareness, but also a critical hope, kind of showing students a way to move forward, again, within that framing of international development as a process of social justice and solidarity. So to make a long story short, what I'm saying is, for example, when we talk about ID work experiences, you know, don't just think the kind of the mainstream organizations, but activist groups, student activism on campus. And a lot of our students get very involved, for example, in around issues with refugee students, refugee support. Sussex is a university of sanctuary. Brighton is a city of sanctuary. Basically the article, I followed the trajectory of three students who I interviewed as part of my larger project. And I looked at their studies, and then I interviewed them after they had graduated. And again, a year after that. So I really had kind of a long-term perspective, and I traced those three kind of student journeys. And the first one is, do I have time to go into that, Bob?
Or oh, by you all means. How... Yeah, no, I'd like to hear some of the details. That'd be great.
Yeah. So the first one is actually a student who wanted to fight in the belly of the beast, because she was really interested in the role of business in international development. And we teach on that because it's increasingly important, right? Businesses are, whether it's for social responsibility or corporate citizenship, businesses are becoming involved in development. You know, it was Kofi Annan and the Global Compact who invited them in. And we feel, you know, our students need to learn about kind of the implications of that, but some of them also want to kind of move in that space after their studies. So how, again, can they do this with a critical awareness? Anyway, this particular student wanted to do that and ended up doing a graduate program after her studies at a big auditing company. And absolutely hated it. Just it didn't work for her at all. And I talk about in the article why. But then said, I'm not kind of ready to abandon the corporate space yet. And then moved to a small organization where she does auditing for charities and is much more involved in the environmental, social, and governance space. And so I'm talking about, you know, that we shouldn't abandon working or trying to bring change from inside, so kind of mainstream institutions, because it's an important space. And I think a lot of our students do go on to work there, and there's possibilities of doing that. It's not without its challenges, and there are no guarantees that it will work. But I think that's an area we need to acknowledge as bringing about, you know, potential change. And then the other journey is of a student who was really involved with student activism around refugees, and then actually has set up her own social enterprise, aiming to connect volunteers with newly arrived refugees to teach them English, but also to empower them to write their own stories and change the awful narrative we have in the UK around refugees and migration. And then the last one is somebody who kind of recognized herself as an activist through, for example, work with the university to sign on to an ethical provider of electronics and computers, and said, I realized that all the emails I was sending to the procurement team and to the senior management team were a form of activism. Mm-hmm. And eventually the university joined this particular kind of code of conduct. So we three kind of distinct trajectories, but all of them speak to kind of an opening up of where these work experience should take place, what kind of tools and skills they should be teaching, and what are the pathways of change that students can envision through them. So I'm arguing for this expanded notion, basically.
Well, it's very interesting the way you've laid it out, because you know, a lot of the sort of experiential learning that's taken place in development studies that we're not in activist context, we're really about volunteering, right? And the stories are, you know, we look back at them now, some of them are pretty cringy, right? They, you know, the saviorism that goes into this. And we've seen with recent controversies, like the MeToWe scandal in Canada, and there's an incredible documentary called Volunteers Unleashed that sort of gets into how that was corporatized very quickly. The demand for volunteers to go abroad and create basically create a profit scheme out of it is really, really quite questionable. But what I'm hearing here is that this back to this critical hope, I like that because it reminds me of like what the F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote in one of his books. He said, you know, the quality of first-rate intelligence is to hold two ideas in your mind at the same time. And that means like you can see that things are completely hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise, you know?
Yes.
And that's not running around with, oh, I'm so passionate about this topic, or I'm so curmudgeon about this topic. It's realizing that there's a litany of obstacles out there, and the critical means of piecing together the moving parts, learning to dialogue with people, learning to propose ideas is actually a huge thing that I see a lot of students now are almost timid about. They don't want to propose some sort of idea for fear of having it as heavily critiqued as we've proposed or critiqued previous attempts at development and change. And I think, you know, you roll it all together, and if it's the ability to create a pedagogy that sees that critical hope as a skill to be built, then wherever the placements are, then that will be the inimitable experience of students that I would hope that the volunteer brigades and the corporatization of tourism travel will leave alone, because you couldn't cookie cutter it. You couldn't brand it into that mimicked experience that has happened with the sort of saviorism, volunteerism of the past.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And there's so many ideas here, but I think the critique of volunteerism, it's quite interesting that we sometimes have students coming into our program saying, you know, I did a gap year and I did one of those volunteerism things, and it felt all wrong, but I didn't know why. But it made me want to study international development, because I realized I needed to understand much more if I wanted to go into this area professionally. And these are, of course, excellent students, because they're already coming in, right? Asking the right questions and questioning their own experience. So that's fantastic, a fantastic base to build on. But we also have students writing, for example, critical honors thesis on volunteerism. And it's interesting, we've struggled for a long time. We don't offer a module on a field trip in international development at Sussex. Mm. I think a lot of programs do. But we struggled with that. We really thought about it critically. And we didn't want to replicate any kind of volunteerism. And we thought it was really difficult to do in, like, you know, the 2 weeks that you might have. But we also felt it was a question of affordability and kind of equity. So for all these reasons, we've never done one. And maybe it's a bit of a cop-out, but we couldn't just find a way to do it right. But so students engage with volunteerism discursively and looking at websites. And I always say, if you're asked to pay for something, then just assume it's not a good place to start. The other thing, what you said about your quote from Fitzgerald, the idea of having two ideas in your mind, it reminds me of this idea of ambivalence. And I think teaching our students to be comfortable with ambivalence, right, and with asking open-ended questions and with not getting an answer that provides an easy solution or maybe any solution, I think that's really important, you know, ambiguity, ambivalence, because things aren't black and white. And if anybody's looking for black and white, then I think, uni is, or kind of critical teaching is not the place to find that. And And lastly, a lot of my inspiration comes from the work of Gibson Graham, the human geographers and kind of their diverse economy, but also their writings around academics becoming subjects of possibility through our research and our teaching. And I very much bring this into my own teaching, and a lot of my colleagues do. So, and I think students appreciate that. They do feel challenged. We have interesting discussions. Now, you said something earlier about students feeling indoctrinated. I think it definitely goes into a particular direction. And I think kind of the critical approach kind of runs through all of our teaching. But we are really upfront with our students. You know, I'm the undergraduate admissions tutor, and I do the admissions talks, and I say, this is what you'll be getting when you come to us. Yeah.
It's interesting because if you go back, I'm just sort of thinking anecdotally, but if you think back maybe even 30 years ago in development studies, when the programs were just emerging and becoming more popular, either as programs or departments, the graduates coming out of them were getting gobbled up and getting employment, a lot of it. You look at the Global Affairs Canada, it's our Ministry of Foreign Affairs. You should be surprised how many people in there have got some sort of global development or international development studies exposure within their academic background. And then, you know, that the job sort of got gobbled up, and then enter the volunteerism years. And mm-hmm. And now we're sort of moving into a new era. And I think this, you know, question about is development dead? I'm hearing it so much, and the conversations just, every time they come up, you almost lose the will to live when you hear it. It just takes the wind right out of the room. I don't think that's the right framework for it. I think we're seeing a movement of the purpose of core questions in global development entering a new era. And it's one where there isn't the North and the South, and there isn't the black and the white, and there isn't just the goals that need to be achieved. It's a murky, transdimensional space now that has all sorts of local and global connections that we can't necessarily understand through traditional experiential learning. And I think some of the questions that you're putting forward here are the ones where other profs, other programs, especially ones that may be concerned about austerity in this time, begin to think seriously about, because it might require a revisiting of how we've branded ourselves. The old brand was like, go have an adventure, then work for the government, or go have an adventure and start a business. Well, you still have your adventure, but what next? And really the skill set that at the heart of it, like you see those human geographers have helped push along quite well, is about raising that critical capacity. I do think that we're in a spot now where we can begin to expand that and worry less about what the marketability of the degree is, for what are you going to do with that degree, or what are you going to get into afterwards, but just have a really robust skill set to go with. Some of the other people on this podcast have come on here recently, development practitioners, and they're all calling for young minds to get involved in whatever shop it is they're working on. I think to Gretchen Villegas, who was on here a few weeks ago, and she laid out perfectly to say, you know, how do you get involved with it? Well, go somewhere and, you know, well, what was her recipe? It was sort of commit to go abroad, check it out. If you like it, go back and really commit. And then finally develop a skill set, develop something that you can do to help the cause. And it could be finances, it could be social movements and organization strategies, whatever. But that sharpened skill set on top of global awareness seems to be a potentially important combination.
Yeah. I think skills are important. What I would add is definitely a real kind of reflexivity. You know, Ilan Kapoor wrote that article on hyper self-reflexivity. And I think, again, you know, students as future practitioners being really aware of their own positionality, both within an institution, but also a longer term relationship between maybe the country that they're working in and the country where they were, you know, where they are from. So I think that personal reflexivity. So we talk at Sussex, and we've actually just done a rebranding. We've rewritten the text on our entire website much more explicitly around this idea of justice and activism, and as much as, you know, the marketing team was allowing us to do so. But we're saying, you know, we're giving you the knowledge, the skills, and the reflexivity to make a change in whatever area you want to work in. So it's kind of really much more broadly. And now, just something you mentioned about where our students go and work. So obviously, you know, in the context of recruiting students, some of the people in our marketing were thinking that when DFID disappeared, you know, the Department for International Development, that was closed down a few years back here in the UK, or merged back with the Foreign Affairs Group, that had a bit of an effect that students, you know, can't see where they could go and work anymore. But that's precisely saying students, you know, the government organizations, charities, whatever, World Bank, UN, whatever it might be, that's only one possibility. Really think there's other ways, more critical ways in which you could use those skills to make a difference. So just opening up their awareness around that. And when we now do our alumni days and, you know, kind of employability days, we always make sure we get people from a wide variety of institutions to speak to our students, to show them that diversity of institutions, they can go into places, institutions, whatever it might be.
Great. That's great. I mean, I think these are all pieces of the equation. And okay, I just want to thank you so much for writing the article that you did. We'll have a link to it in the description below that you can check out, and to keep fighting the good fight. The critical hope is encouraging, and I would hope that conversation gets expanded to students and faculty and to administrators and everyone else in between, to remember that there's a lot of important processes out there that training in global development can prepare you for. And the work you're doing, kudos, keep it up, come back to the podcast again, and we'll see how we're doing down the road.
Can I just get a really quick pitch in? I do have a website. Yes. Called creativeuniversities.com, which is the companion website to the book you mentioned, where I talk about the whole pedagogy in which critical hope is embedded. And that's a really good way. There's lots of material on the website to kind of become more familiar with this whole area. So it's creativeuniversities.com.
Perfect. We'll put that in the link below as well. And again, thank you so much for joining us on GDP.
You're welcome.